Hey, hey, we're live.
Hey, we're talking about next week. Next week, we got some real, real hot stuff coming. But anyway, welcome back to Switchcast Live. We have some great stuff
don't leave.
Tonight. Yeah, we'll just see you next week. Okay. Yeah. I'm your host, Doug Tabbitt, and Switchcast is the automotive-related podcast where we are searching for the truth and the humor in the car industry. And sometimes both of those get us in trouble. But if it ain't true, it better be funny. And it also better be predicated with the word alleged or so we've heard, I guess, right? That's a message from our legal team, which we don't have.
Say Ethan?
Ethan Huffnagel, our producer and ChatGPT is our legal advisor.
It tends to be.
Yes. Anyway.
Every business needs a good AI in. This
That's
is ours.
Right. That's right.
Oh, man. Tonight we've got a full deck. I'm back from vacation. Thank you all who joined us last week for the Best of Switchcast. It was a pretty good highlight reel, I think. Thanks to Ethan for putting it together. If you haven't seen it, it's some of the best of Switchcast. Aptly named, not clickbait at all, and neither is our title tonight. We are talking about everything, everything in the title. So if you've got questions, comments, throw those in. We'd love to engage with you tonight, and we're going to get right to it.
I would like to call out Chris in YouTube chat, says, checking in from Austria, staying up for this one. Thanks for the podcast, boys.
Heck,
that
yeah.
Is impressive.
I've heard, on our vacation, we heard that Austria was a great place to ski, and it was, what one guy said, it was 98% of the Swiss Alps in terms of, like, luxury and experience and everything for, like, a third of the price. Ooh. Everybody spends tons of money to go to Switzerland, go to the Swiss Alps, but Austria was, like, just as good and not as expensive, so.
Heck yeah.
I kind of want to go now. Secrets out! Sorry! Aston Martin, first piece of news via AutoCar and Car and Driver. Aston Martin has backpedaled on their declaration to be all electric by 2030. Seems like a common theme among manufacturers this year. And now says they are committed to sell internal combustion engine vehicles well into the next decade. Their primary reasoning? It's what buyers want. That's right. Their chairman, Lawrence Stroll. Yeah, you know that name from mediocre Formula One driving. But let's see. He said, quote, it seems that there is a lot more hype in EVs, politically driven or whatever, than consumer demand, particularly at an Aston Martin price point. So, what do you know? They're following market demands. That's exciting. One automaker at a time. Caving to, my goodness, what the people actually want.
Yeah, and it says in the article as well that they're also going to be looking into plug-in hybrids as well as a stopgap to augment some of the V8 and V12 engines that people actually want. So I think this is... it's going to be a win for everybody.
Yeah. Yeah. I have to say, I'm warming up to the plug-in hybrid idea. I will admit, almost every article we read about EVs is confirmation bias on here. This is not real journalism on this podcast. This is an opinion podcast, okay?
the peanut gallery is shocked. We're going to automotive enthusiast websites and getting news about the people enthusiastic about automobiles.
However, I am searching for the truth. And when data conflicts with my opinions, I will listen to it. And it seems like the hybrid is one of the ways to the future for efficient motoring. That's both exciting and what consumers want and friendly to the environment. And my being anti-EV is not because I'm anti-environment. It's not like a, you know, oh, I'm a right winger, so I hate the earth. You know, that has nothing to do with it on either perspective. It's just I don't think that EVs are the right answer for the environment. I think it's a shell game, a distraction. But anyway, speaking of Aston Martins, A couple of stick shift DB9s sold quite well recently. We had talked about one on the Shrewd Negotiation segment a while back with a dealer negotiating themselves down and then and reducing their price and then denying that they had reduced their price, even though the evidence was right there. Anyway, there's a 50-some thousand-mile one that had sold around $48,000. At least that was the last price reduction before it was sold. And one recently, last week, sold on Bring a Trailer with 44,000 miles and a bad Carfax for $58,000, as well as one of the first ones in a number of years to cross the six-figure mark, at least since 2021. That was a DBS, golly. $107,000 one sold with a sport package on Bring a Trailer, 16,000 miles just a couple of weeks ago. And prior to that, a 13,000 mile one had sold for right around $80,000. So the market is increasing on those. People are starting to appreciate them. And, you know, I'm not going to take credit, but about a month ago, I did release a video on social media comparing Aston Martin DB9s to Ferraris and Bourbon and saying how that the DB9 was a better car than the comparable Ferrari, but a third of the price. And look at that. All of a sudden, they're going up in value. So, you know.
It sounds like you're trying to take some credit there, Doug.
Listen, since we've started talking down on EVs on this podcast, numerous car manufacturers around the world have backpedaled on their promises to go all EV. They've totally changed their production plans. Since I made the video about DB9s, they've skyrocketed in value. And I mean,
with these two data points, the trend is clear.
Since we said Carvana was going bankrupt, their stock. No, okay, I'm 2 for 3.
2 out of 3.
I'm 2 for 3. It's pretty good. It's
Can we try to tell people that GT3s are terrible while we're at it? Maybe help me out a little bit.
Those IMS bore scores.
Yeah, get them out of here. Nobody's safe.
Speaking of good bourbon, another loyal listener and repeat customer earning his Keep Your Woman But Switch Cars shirt, Jim Ryder, sent us another bottle of bourbon, Blade and Bow.
Ooh.
The logo looks like a stick shift thing with the keys. So we're gonna try some sound effects here.
Oh, get your...
Oh, gosh.
Yeah. What?
Bourbon ASM. Doug is struggling right now.
Up to the mic.
Bourbon ASMR brought to you by... Oh. Oh, and he popped a premature pop.
Sure, whatever.
Good. Anyway.
Here we go. This is good.
All right.
Oh, man.
Oh, yeah. You want to hit me with some of that? Or I can hit myself with some of it.
You can hit yourself with some of that. while Tyler is filling up his glass, another piece of EV news. Tesla is canceling their plans to build a sub $30,000 compact SUV, which I think they originally, Elon had said they were going to do in like 2019. No, I'm sorry. Yes, that is correct. But, Elon's made lots and lots of promises that have not come true, like the Roadster 2, I think it is. And now he's saying that that's going to have a 0 to 60 time of less than 1 second. Sure. Okay. We'll see that. But they said they're going to focus instead on Tesla's driverless robo taxi project. Another thing that Tesla promised back in like 2017 or 19 and said it would be ready that year. And, you know, 5 years later, here we are. And this is going to be a level 5 autonomous vehicle being able to drive on city streets without a human. But small detail, though, there are currently no vehicles with SAE level 5 autonomy anywhere on American roads.
Do you think he's going to give this up at any point? He's been promising this forever, and it seems to be really not possible, which I might be stepping into something. But
you know, listen, Google canceled their plans to build a fully self-driving vehicle.
And they've got photos of all the roads. They know what they look like.
I think they need a little more than photos to be able to drive on them. Yep. I lost my train of thought. So we are going to get a little more into autonomous vehicles at the later on into this podcast, though, and talk about autonomous cannonball. And there is something to note, which, spoiler alert, I will get into that. The person who is responsible for the autonomous cannonball recently stated that most of the time that they had to have their hands on the wheel was in the city. Yet Tesla is trying to say, oh, yeah, we're going to do this driverless robo-taxi thing, which is pretty much all city driving, and that's where the autonomous vehicles are the weakest. So anyway, but what does a cannonballer know about driving? Let's see. Manual transmissions. Oh, wait. So before I skip on to that, I would like to give Elon a little bit of credit. They don't need to cancel plans to build a sub $30,000 compact SUV because they already are making one.
Oh, are they?
Oh, yeah. All of their new stuff, the Model X and Model Y, that's just like a year after it's produced, it's sub $30,000 because he just slashes prices on the new ones.
Gotcha.
So they're creating lots and lots of sub $30,000 EVs, but they're just not brand new. Tyler, on a better note, to you know, kind of we're moving in this direction of catering to the automotive enthusiast. I think there was an article about all of the manual transmission cars that are still available on the market in terms of brand new. Is it an okay list?
I would say there's a lot of stuff here that matters, which I appreciate. That's not the question I want to ask. It's too broad. What manufacturer do you think makes the most?
Honda.
No, actually.
Mazda.
Warmer, but not quite. So we've got warmer. A tie.
Okay.
For first. BMW has 4, M2, M3, M4, and Z4.
Which is interesting because I think I just read something that said they're going to like eliminate the manual transmission in all their M cars.
Which is wild because reviewing this article and putting together this list, I was like, I rag on BMW a lot for no longer being the like ultimate driving machine or whatever the heck their tagline was. But they've got a ton of manuals by comparison.
I think they still use that tagline. Like, it's an irony, though. It's in quotations now.
We saw it on that silly XM thing at Amelia, too. It's like on the little plate frame, ultimate driving machine, like that.
But in quotes.
Yeah. Toyota is tied for first with 4. GR86, GR Corolla, GR Supra, and the Tacoma.
Nice. So one base model vehicle so far, the Tacoma, because BMW doesn't put it in any of their regular vehicles, only the M cars. So we've got the Tacoma as the only pedestrian vehicle with a manual transmission.
The other things I would consider pedestrian are the, where are we at? The Honda Civic, the Mazda 3, Nissan Versa.
Oh, how about the Nissan Altima?
No,
still CVT?
Still CVT.
Oh, yeah.
I'm going to catch some flack for calling this civilian or normal, but the Jetta still has a manual. Related to that, the Golf GTI and Golf R, still you can get manuals in, which are pretty sweet. Ford has Porsche Mustang 911. And Bronco. Yeah, the 911 and the 718 in both Boxster and Cayman form. The Lotus Emira, one of them.
Yep.
Kia Forte GT. I guess that is probably, I should have put that into the normal car category. Jeep Gladiator and Wrangler. Hyundai Elantra N. And the Cadillac Blackwings, CT4, CT5.
All right. That's a pretty good list.
So Nissan Z, Chevy Camaro. I'm all over the place, but I think I hit about everything.
Didn't they cancel the Camaro? Isn't that done?
I think it was on the list.
Maybe this is the last year.
But it might be soon.
Right.
Acura Integra. Soon. Those are sweet in a manual.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. And the Honda Civic Type R, right? Is that manual?
That wasn't on the list. Oh. Well, it said the Honda Civic. Okay. So I would imagine.
Civic Type R. Yes.
I would consider those the same.
My
Same model.
The only problem with modern manual transmissions, I'm not, this is generalizing, but it's a lot of the ones that I've driven, is now they're almost not manuals anymore because they have like crazy hydraulic clutch assist. So there's no feel. They have the hill hold assist. They have electronic parking brakes. So you can't even like rip the e-brake and do fun things when you put the clutch in. And, what else? Like the automatic rev matching on downshifts. Like they do so many of the things for you that go along with wanting manual transmission that I feel like it's kind of like having a video game manual transmission where you have the lever and you have the clutch, but it's all an illusion of control.
There's also like, stall assist, or I don't know if there's an actual name for it, but my Volvo doesn't. My Volvo is from 2010, so it's pretty old at this point. If I like almost stall it sometimes, it will kick up the revs.
Right.
Like for me in attempt to save me, which I never like.
Yeah, that sounds like you could wear the clutch out pretty good because if your muscle memory is such that you're trying to like unstall yourself,
yeah,
then it's yeah.
There's weird computer things.
Gotcha. Still on the EV train here, GM and Honda are partnering up to invest $85 million in a Michigan facility for large-scale hydrogen fuel cell production, which is interesting because Honda announced fairly recently that I think them and Nissan were partnering up. It was like less official. It's just kind of, it wasn't a partnership. It was a memorandum of understanding that they were both going to be allies in EV production. Toyota was notably not in that discussion because they're all about the hybrids. But anyway, they are going to be investing in hydrogen fuel cell production. They believe that it's going to be far more efficient than the previous fuel cell availability and that this may be one of the ways forward for a zero emissions future. And I appreciate that. I appreciate that, you know, this isn't necessarily a government sponsored initiative. I'm sure there will be credits. You know, they're not dumb. But I like the direction we're going, both in that and the zero emissions fuel that Porsche has been developing. So I think there's a lot of different alternatives. Hydrogen is really good because, again, you don't have to reinvent the wheel in terms of rebuilding the world infrastructure of refueling or recharging, which a lot of people are not considering the environmental impact of completely changing the supply chain of energy. It takes a long time for that to ROI. Speaking of alternative energy, we had the solar eclipse last week.
Oh, yeah. Did everybody stare at the sun?
You know, I was thinking originally when I heard about this that Mitsubishi was coming out with a new EV.
It'd be a crossover.
Solar eclipse, right? But I know if they tried that, it would probably last about as long as the eclipse, you know, 3 to 4 minutes. And they'd likely sell so poorly that, like the actual solar eclipse, it would probably be 10 to 20 years before you'd see another one in real life. But we did enjoy a full totality here, and we watched the moon hide the sun for 3.5 minutes-ish in our front yard. It was amazing.
It was sweet. Everybody that was poo-pooing it as like just a lame kind of thing, like they just didn't know. It was a very cool experience, like a very cool human experience.
And I would like to see a Mitsubishi Eclipse with solar panels on it, though.
Yeah, we can make this happen.
Yes.
And we can sell them ticket. No, wait, hold on. We talked about that a few weeks ago. We can't do that.
If it got wrecked, though, do you think the insurance company would totality it out?
So close.
Sorry, I need to workshop that one a little bit more.
Oh, so good. Switchcast is brought to you by Boxcast. Boxcast is a live streaming company based in Cleveland, Ohio. They serve broadcasters and viewers around the world. Their founders launched Boxcast back in 2013 with one purpose, to make people a part of the experience. If you're looking to live stream your podcast, church service, car show, sporting event, wedding, or even your cannonball attempt, Boxcast is an easy and flexible live streaming platform for organizations. Boxcast is so easy that we're broadcasting this show with a phone. So head on over to switchcars.com/boxcast to start your free trial. Hank, the Corvette curmudgeon, you are back in studio.
Yeah, how are you doing?
I am doing great. You make it through all the rain and storms and stuff to get here tonight?
Oh, yes, but yeah. It's nice. It leaves the salts off the roads. I think we're going to start car show season soon.
Yeah, have you taken your Corvette out?
Nope.
Maybe this weekend? Are you planning soon?
I got to check the weather and the humidity and make sure there's no wind coming or anything that might blow some branches in the way. And got to check the car show schedule, too, and see what kind of loot's on the line.
Yes, yes. Have you, I think we talked about it. Do you think you're going to go to that Porsche Club and Corvette crossover car show?
Well, that's a good question. I don't know. I did get to look down on some Porsches down at the Amelia Island thing with you.
Yes.
And that was pretty fun. That was pretty fun. The owners were a little snooty, I thought. But, you know, there were some nice cars, so maybe I'll go. And if I can judge some rich guys with Porsches and tell them their stuff stinks a little more than they think, then, you know, that might be a good time.
Yeah, that sounds fun. I'll be bringing one of mine, so I hope you can judge me with all of your whatever opinions you have. I'm ready. Tonight, I did want to talk to you.
I kind of want to judge the owners a little bit, you know, more than the cars.
Is that so? Well, you judge me every Wednesday, so I think you've got that out of your system.
Maybe.
Alrighty. Tonight, somebody sent into the show. This is from Nice Car Bro on, I believe, Instagram. Sent to you the 10 Commandments for Corvette owners. I was going to read them to you, see if you agree, and see what you feel.
Okay.
Commandment number one: Thou shalt not loan a Corvette to anyone.
Yep, that's pretty true. I might not even let them sit in the passenger seat.
Number two, thou shalt not bring a Corvette to an automatic car wash.
Well, no, duh. California car dusters only. And you, I mean, you should never even let it get dirty. Then you don't have to wash it.
That's true.
Just wipe it down.
Removes the
little
problem.
Little spritz.
You should ask Doug what happened to his Porsche when he took it into an automatic car wash, though, if you want to. Scary things.
That's a problem. Money don't buy sense.
Number three, thou shalt not fail to wave to a fellow owner.
Oh, yep, the Corvette wave. I mean, that's, I don't know those. You know, those C7, C8 guys are mostly rich snobs, and they're not real Corvette guys, so they don't wave at anyone anyway. So I don't wave to any Corvette owner that has anything newer than a C6.
Okay.
So I'd modify that rule a little bit.
All right, but we're still on the right path. Thou shalt not swear at Corvette, for it is being very temperamental.
What?
Has that ever happened
to
yours?
These aren't Italian cars. This is made in America stuff. These are reliable cars.
Yeah, that one's very strange. I'm not sure whose Corvette is being temperamental. Thou shalt not cruise on an unpaved road is number five.
I feel like that's stating the obvious.
Get all those rocks hitting the bottom of your car. Thou shalt not pass a fellow Corvette owner in distress.
I suppose that depends if he beat me out for a trophy or not. But, you know, these things don't ever break down. So if you're on the side of the road, it's because you bought some cheap aftermarket parts trying to doll your Corvette up in search of a trophy. So I think you deserve to be there, you know? I mean, I don't know, the guy that wrote this, you know, he must have a real unreliable one. He must have bought a C4 or something.
Yeah, C4 with a, what is it, crossfire injection.
Yeah.
See, I know some Corvette things. Number, what is this, seven? Thou shalt not feed with budget-grade fuel.
Well, premium is pretty dang expensive, and, you know, I'm not going to a racetrack. In fact, I've never even had my car up to redline, so... You know, depends. I'm on a fixed income, so sometimes I got to use the regular. Just put a little octane booster in it every now and then.
All right, we're getting a little off course here, but hopefully they can pull us back in. Number eight, thou shalt not expose Corvette to severe weather conditions.
Well, no kidding. Don't even drive it in light rain or too much humidity.
Number nine, thou shalt not forget to activate alarm.
Where in the world is he parking this thing that he needs to set his alarm?
Also,
I don't even leave my car at a car show by itself. I sit by it the whole time in case somebody wants to ask me about it. I've never needed an alarm. Park it in the garage when it's home.
And then you buy it when it's out.
I don't take it to get milk at the grocery store.
All right, number 10. Thou shalt not acknowledge a Porsche or 280Z as being true sports cars.
Well, yeah, that's a tough one. You know, as much as I give you crap, Tyler, your Porsche is pretty nice. I enjoyed the ride in it, and you know, it's not my budget, but they're pretty nice cars. I'm not going to say they're not real sports cars. Corvette's better, and it's more rare, and it's more reliable, and it's made in America. But you know, we'll let them have their moment. They are pretty impressive cars.
Well, Hank, I appreciate your very even-keeled look at that, even for a Corvette owner. So I appreciate it. Hopefully we'll see you at the car show. I think it's May 20th is the Porsche Club and Corvette one. But that was Hank, everybody, the Corvette curmudgeon, brought to you unwittingly by the Corvette Buy-Sell Trade Group on Facebook. That is your source for cranky boomers, overpriced Corvettes, and reinforced stereotypes.
Ethan didn't crack his smile this time at that
He's
one.
Getting used to it, I think. I need to start inserting random words.
Yeah, we need to put a little bit more beef into that.
A little pizzazz into
Ooh,
it.
Beef.
We need to put some chrome taillights on that description. A couple weeks ago, we talked about the anti-curmudgeon vehicle that was posted on Manheim. It was a 2023 Z06 with 82,000 miles. Well, thanks to a listener who works there, we were able to confirm the sale because it couldn't, like, it didn't show up in Manheim. It will not disclose the number it sold for because it did sell to a dealer. And that's kind of like Manheim's supposed to be dealer only information, whatever. And I guess they're entitled to have their cost private so they can make whatever markup they want. But oddly enough, this person, our source, did mention that the condition report changed dramatically, which is maybe why it didn't show up in my search, because initially I had a screen grab of it and it had a 2.4 out of 5 condition report, which is pretty low. Yeah. But at the sale, it showed a 4.7 out of 5, which is that's like a new car.
New car with 80,000 miles on it.
Right. Yeah. Like every marketplace description ever. So I don't know. I don't know if there was nefarious things happening or if that just like they didn't like the guy that inspected it and he marked every rock chip against it. And then, you know, they got a different judge, I guess. So it does happen. This happened on the famous mint green GT3 when that was for sale. They got a new condition report. This is a car business. We're not gonna make any summary statements on that. Just acknowledge that the condition doubled
somehow overnight.
Right, got 100% better. Another follow up from a couple weeks ago. We were talking about government and car repairs, and it was a contentious episode, mostly because I was full of contention against the government doing this. And there's a lot of people who agreed and there was a few who disagreed. And I want to actually give a shout out to one of our viewers who let us know with a super chat that they disagreed with nearly everything that I said.
It was probably the most kind way to disagree.
Right. And I did not see the comment section, but I was informed about it that they got pretty lit up in the comments, but were defending themselves with grace. Now, it is obvious that I disagree with everything they had said, right? You know, it's essentially a socialist mindset of the government should do things versus a capitalist mindset of private enterprise should do things. And there's merits to, you know, any argument, but, you know, not all opinions are equally valid, we'll say. I think I'm right. But what I want to give props to is not for their opinion, because I wholeheartedly disagree, but their ability, and I believe this is an art, to disagree without being disagreeable. It seemed like most of the people that were agreeing with me and lighting this person up were doing it in a disagreeable manner. And the ability to disagree without being disagreeable is an art form that has been lost, I think, in today's social media age, where we can post stuff anonymously and be as contentious and disagreeable as we see fit, things that we would probably never do in person. And I believe the art of debate is a wonderful thing. We appreciate our viewers who disagree with us as much as we do those who agree. We don't want this podcast to be an echo chamber. But I do want to follow up that I feel like I didn't put a cap on some of the things about this government-funded car repair program. I want to reiterate that it's not from a lack of compassion that I am against this program. I think people who are struggling through life should be helped by those who aren't. The point I was making is that government is the worst possible entity to affect this. And if you don't believe me, go stand in line at the post office or the DMV or the Social Security Administration or any other government organization. And as a counterpoint to that, the local license bureau where we get our license plates is the most incredibly efficient government thing I have ever seen. It's amazing how well that's run. But you know why?
Is it because it's privately owned, Doug?
It is. It's a privately owned and operated franchise that is licensed by the government to do their thing. So they do it wonderfully, but they have to turn a profit. They have to do a good job in order to continue, whereas government doesn't. They don't even have to make money. They can lose money hand over fist and just ask for more.
I got to be honest, I don't need to go to a title bureau or BMV very often, but I will go out of my way to go to that one now.
Yes.
Because it's so much of a better experience.
Right, right. That is the Northfield Title and License Bureau, Northfield License Bureau, for any of you who are wondering. Shameless, unpaid
fantastic plug.
But a few examples of how inefficient government is. Guantanamo Bay, I learned this week, costs $13 million per prisoner per year.
Good gravy.
Right. Ohio gave out around $2 billion worth of fraudulent unemployment claims in the wake of the pandemic when everybody was shut down and making claims. $2 billion worth of oops.
I wish I could make that kind of oops.
Right.
My goodness.
And still get like the same budget the next year. Yeah. I don't need to go on, but I could.
Switchcast is also brought to you by Celebrity Machines. Celebrity Machines offers more than 250 different screen-accurate license plates as they've appeared in movies and TV shows like Back to the Future, Ghostbusters, The Fast and the Furious, Breaking Bad, and so many more. Celebrity Machines also makes our dealer insert plates as well as our commemorative 2539 plates from the fastest cannonball run ever. Visit CelebrityMachines.com for more info and use promo code SWITCHCAST to save 25.39% at checkout. Alrighty. Yes.
A little bit of a long one, but stick with us, folks. It's worth it. I think we found the Chrysler curmudgeon on Facebook.
I think we did. This was posted to the Low Miles, No Miles group. Crossfire, his-hers bundle, $35,000 firm. They will not separate at this time. I think they're talking about the cars and not in their marriage, but I hope, you know, that one is solid as well.
I wonder if they have, like, a prenuptial for the cars.
That'd be amazing. There are extras that come with the cars, so we'll have
like
to...
Like stuffed tigers?
I don't see any listed, but who knows? They might be left in the trunk. Spring has sprung here in upstate New York, and it's almost time to get the crossfires out. Some of you already know what I'm about to post. Yes, we are checking to see if there's any serious interest in purchasing all of our crossfire stuff as a package.
Have they posted like every spring or something for the last 5 years?
I do wonder. Like, I mean, it isn't a for sale group, so I guess maybe they know, but... both are retired show cars.
Oh, gosh.
They have never seen winter and barely seen rain.
Crossfires are retired show cars. Do they also have, like, show dogs? Or do they go around in those? It seems like... Yeah. Okay.
All right. So hers is up first. 2005 Crossfire SRT6 SSB. Low
miles.
Approximately 30,000. I will confirm once they come out of storage. Light cosmetic mods, including factory chrome SRT6 wheels, needs nothing but a new owner.
Yeah, I heard that before.
And a new windshield, apparently. Scratches from a Scotch-Brite cleaning pad cleaning bugs off.
Okay.
While it's not noticeable in photos, I wanted to point that out. It has light and tasteful hand-done pinstripes that can be removed.
Should be removed.
All right, now onto,
were they painted on or taped?
They do not say.
Hand-done pinstripes screams painted to me, and that is not that easy to remove.
You're going
to
need those Scotch-Brite pads all on the side of the car.
No, because I bought a Cadillac once with painted-on pinstripes, and it had, like, etched or burned or something into the clear coat. So, like, we took them off, but they weren't totally gone.
Oh, yikes.
Yeah.
All right, now on to his Crossfire. 2005, limited six-speed stick, low miles, approximately 20K. I will confirm once they come out of storage. Light cosmetic mods and one-off Dayton wire wheels. 18 on the front and 20 on the back.
Ooh.
That's big.
That's got to look like a weird hot rod.
Currently has the factory SRT6 front bumper cover. The original is in storage.
20 inch wire wheels on a Chrysler product, but like, I'm guessing that these people are geriatric in nature. That's so confusing. That's like, I don't know if I'm a classic Jaguar or like a hood rat show car. Or like the Swangers or whatever in Texas, yeah, where they have the crazy wire wheels. Like 20-inch wire wheels on a Chrysler does not say retired show car to me. It screams like street takeover.
Yeah, it's a choice. I wish I had photos. I don't actually have photos of the cars. I should have found those beforehand. But they were clipped out of the screenshots I have. It also has the SRT6 rear deck lid, I guess. So I don't know if you could get a stick with the SRT6, maybe not. That's why he's got all these accoutrements to make it look like one. Needs nothing but a new owner as well.
Oh yeah. Ooh, heard that already.
Are a few light dimples that a dent doctor can take care of. While it's not noticeable in photos, I wanted to mention it. Like everything
else.
Did
the judges not pick those out when they were judging his car?
I guess so. Ooh. It also has light, tasteful, hand-done pinstripes that can be removed.
Oh gosh.
All right, you ready for the extras?
I would like to have a beer with these people and ask some questions, but I feel like they don't drink alcohol.
They absolutely don't. All right, you ready for the extras that come with these cars?
I'm ready.
Okay. Complete factory Miller dealer toolbox. Complete set of stock SRT6 factory rims. Two Crossfire Good. Covers. Two sets of NOS luggage. Actually, wait, hold on. You could get Crossfire luggage?
Apparently.
That's amazing. Two sets of lately used luggage. So what these people did, Doug, is they have
a set of
luggage in storage.
They had them in the plastic for the show to be judged.
Oh my gosh.
They had a second set that they used.
Oh, amazing.
Oh, no.
Honestly, that's got to be some rare stuff, though.
Did they put their new luggage in the old luggage? Did they use the used luggage?
Oh, man.
That's special.
They have miscellaneous Crossfire print documents, miscellaneous Crossfire jackets and shirts.
Do they have the VIN numbers embroidered into the jackets?
I wish. Custom large Crossfire dealer neon sign.
That's something I've always wanted.
It'd look great here in the shop. This is a bit confusing. Miscellaneous used Get Me Home tires and rims.
They probably have a support vehicle or a trailer or something, and then they drive home on their non-show wheels. What I thought was the funniest, though, I trolled hard on this listing, but somebody asked about the Scotch-Brite pads for the windshield. And the seller responded that it was a magic eraser and that their detailer had gotten rid of most of it.
What?
But because these are retired show cars and they didn't want to replace the windshield because then the numbers won't match. The windshield numbers. So I trolled and I was like, I'm sorry, the numbers won't match on the windshield? Like, nobody's ever asked that ever about Crossfires. Like, numbers matching for a historic Corvette or Porsche on the engine and the gearbox, sure. But the windshield on a Chrysler Crossfire? I don't think so. And so he went on to say, oh, yes, each piece of glass on the Crossfire has the VIN etched into it. When you are showing cars and they are being judged, numbers matching glass counts.
Is he smoking something?
You can't pay me to care enough about this. Yet we are, because we're talking about it. But the funniest thing was, is somebody else who actually knows about this stuff. Like, I don't know. Okay. Like, yeah, some older rare cars, like the Lamborghini Diablo we have, does have the serial number etched into the glass. So it is important to have the original glass, not necessarily from a collectability standpoint, but to confirm that, like, oh, okay, the car probably wasn't wrecked if all the glass is original, right? Same thing as having VIN stickers on a car. It just confirms that the car is original. It's not the VIN stickers themselves that matter. It's what they're evidence of. But on a Crossfire, I'm sorry, just nobody cares. But somebody chimed in to say that, no, that actually wasn't a thing on Crossfires. It was something that the dealers did that people would pay for. It was like a thing back in the 90s when, like, people would pay for rust proofing and VIN etching, and you could trace the car if it was stolen. So this guy is all bent out of shape about not replacing his windshield glass, because then it wouldn't be numbers matching, because he's got to get the perfect score being judged when it was a dealer add-on they paid for in the first place. Not to mention the janky wire wheels.
The amount of chrome my dude has on his car.
But
I found photos. This is absurd. Chrome door handles?
Yeah. And he's worried, right? He's worried about the numbers matching glass, but he has all this chrome crap on it. Like,
and they've got like fake chrome tiny little mud flaps on. What are these? And they're convertibles. I'm offended.
Oh, yes. Yes. Hank should meet this guy. But there's a very obvious lesson that nobody needs to learn from this, is if you have two cars, don't bother selling them together. Like, they are never, ever, ever going to find some other couple in the world that cares this much about Chrysler Crossfires to buy all this stuff.
Seriously.
Like, sell one, sell the other, sell all the accoutrement, and take the dang hood rat wire wheels off of them.
It looks so
and
bad.
And sell those, give them away, donate them.
Put them in the trash.
go down to a seedy part of town and drop them off, and somebody will put them on their 300C and then take it to a street takeover event. So,
Yes, Officer in YouTube chat has a very good question. What show takes Crossfires?
I don't have an answer for that.
I don't think we're trying to sit over here and yuck somebody else's yum, but this is just really intense. Like, they're asking for it.
Listen, I kind of like Crossfires. They're a great little sporty car for $10,000 to $15,000. I want to make fun of somebody who loves their Crossfire this much that their marital life is dedicated to preserving these things like they are pets.
It's
like
wild.
Show horses. So, I mean, I get it. They're just as weird people in the Ferrari world, but I feel like it's a little more justified when you have a car that is worth showing in and of itself.
Yeah, these Crossfires are quirky and kind of cool looking, but they're from like the worst era of Chrysler. It's like everything is terrible.
But they're Mercedes, though.
Oh, that's
right. It's a Mercedes SLK.
I forgot.
It was not from a great era of Mercedes either, from a quality standpoint. I feel like it was the tail end of the best era of Chrysler from a design standpoint, because they were doing all the retro heritage stuff and they were really pushing the envelope. Quality, maybe, maybe not. But I think they were kind of cool. I've considered buying one.
Have you really? Would
not
it be an SRT?
These
two right here.
I have not considered buying two. I've considered buying one. Just for kicks and giggles. It's a fun, cheap car.
And it's like such a short wheelbase. It's got to be kind of wild.
Yeah.
To like drive spiritedly.
Right. Oh, I don't know.
Would you do a convertible so you can get wind in your hair and a Crossfire convertible?
Yeah, the coupe looks like it's leaning forward too much. I do like the convertible better.
The Question of the Week is brought to you by Nuts for Sticks. Nuts for Sticks is a brand celebrating the manual transmission in all of its forms. Forget the flappy paddles, we like shifting ourselves. Check out our fun and funny stick-themed shirts at nutsforsticks.com and save 10% on your order using the discount code SWITCHCAST. That is nutsforsticks.com and use code SWITCHCAST. Our question of the week comes to us from what looks like Jordan on Facebook, I think.
Instagram.
Oh, they all look the same. All right. Hey, longtime listener, first time caller. I love that phrase. It's so overused, but I love it. Getting to the point, I want to get my first and hopefully last sports car or fun car to drive. How would I start with hiring you to consult?
Is that the question or?
No, there's a lot more, okay. But I figured I'd let you kind of sit on that for a minute. Was thinking
you
a
send
99-
me money. That's how you start.
Was thinking a 996 or E30 M3 or Lotus Elise. We've got varying price categories here.
Yes. Depending on the quality.
Yes.
Yeah.
Don't want long-term maintenance nightmare. So why do you want a 996? I like the Lotus for that reason. Toyota engine. I was born in the 80s, so I love the 90s and early 2000s cars, and the 996 was the first Porsche I ever sat in. I like the NSX too, but their prices have gotten out of control. I'm down in the Dallas, Texas area.
Hmm. So if you like NSXs but are turned off by the prices, which, you know, a bad one you can get in for about 60 grand for like a pretty bad one, like a really bad one. But a decent one is like 85. So I'm assuming that that is out of his budget. So let's say that 50 is the budget, right? Because a Lotus Elise is easily attainable in that price range. A 996, definitely. Could even get a bad 996 turbo for that money. I like the Elise as well. All three of those cars are very, very different driving personalities. The E30 M3 is the only outlier to me, though, that's confusing because those prices have gone more out of control than the NSXs. Good ones are six figures all day long.
Yeah.
And you need a 200,000-mile modified one to get one even in the price range of like a really good Lotus Elise. So I feel like the bottom end of the E30 M3 market is very close to the bottom end of the NSX market. And if I'm stretching my budget out of any of those choices, I would go for an NSX as well. Hands down, 100%. It's the most reliable out of all of them. The Elises are good, but they're not bulletproof. You can break those engines if you do too many things to them. The E30s are pretty good, but not bulletproof either. The 996s are... Yeah, well, IMS bore scoring and then some.
Look, I love mine, but I know that it's like at any moment.
But Tyler lives in constant fear of...
I've got a lot of anxiety. It's fine.
I'd make a marital joke about like living in constant fear of your engine leaving you, but anyway. You're a better spouse to your car than that. Of those three choices, I'd probably go for Lotus Elise. It is a very different feel driving it. I mean, it is Spartan as Spartan gets. The 996 is quite a bit more luxurious, and the E30 is a slow box, but they're fun with the right mods. But yeah, I'd stretch and go for the NSX. Do it.
Even if you get like a pretty okay NSX, I feel like you get a compromise of a fantastic sports car with reliability. Like an NSX to me seems like you can still road trip it, you can still use it all the time, but it is very yes. much a mid-engine sports car. The Elise, while they'll never make a car like that ever again, and they
There's
are incredible
a reason for it.
It's like, it is like, and everybody's like, it's a go-kart for the road. That's what an Elise is. It's a little bit of metal.
Right.
No,
it's
with
a
body
go-kart
on top
that
of it.
Really shouldn't be for the road. And DOT yeah. and NHTSA said no more for the road. They
yes.
literally said,
like, we're done.
Nope, this is not safe. This is not an appropriate road vehicle. So not that I care about their opinion, but it, you know, I kind of agree with them on that. So for the Scaminator this week, we have a couple of quick things, and we'll gloss over them because we're running out of time. And we have a really good props and flops of the week that are some good discussion. But there was a question, I think, on Instagram about a dealer, about a guy selling a car, and a dealer wanted to wire him funds and didn't ask very many questions, and he thought that was odd. He goes, is this a scam? And I'm going to take this moment to point out that switchcast.live is the best place to interact with our podcast, to send us questions, most importantly, because Instagram, I went through my primary messages, my general messages, my all requests, and then my hidden requests. I literally had to search four different things, and I could not find this guy's question, but I just kind of remembered it. So please, if you have an important question, we'd love to get an email through switchcast.live from you. And that's also your hub for all things this podcast. You can find out where to download the audio podcast. You can catch up on old episodes. You can read old blog posts, see highlights, stuff like that. So again, utilize that website, and we love to get questions through there. anyway, quick answer to the question is, no, just because a dealer doesn't ask very many questions and is ready to wire funds, it doesn't mean it's a scam. You may just have underpriced it, or, you know, they know exactly what they're buying and they're willing to take the gamble. So we do that a lot. We ask a lot of questions, but we're, you know, pretty ready to buy if the car is the right price and we find it online. So that's not immediately a red flag. Typically, scammers are trying to, like, Western Union you or get you to send them a cashier's check back. It's very rare that somebody's going to scam you with your own wire transfer information. But if you're concerned about that, use a bank account that you never use or doesn't have money in it, and just drain the account when you're done with it. So, and I think that's what he was planning on doing anyway. Also, Scaminator preview maybe for next week. Our boy Charles Harris from Direct Auto Tennessee, formerly of Direct Auto Tennessee, is allegedly still at it, still scamming people. I got a call yesterday about this, that there was a recent scam, and we covered some of his alleged and confirmed activities on a previous episode of the podcast, and he threatened to sue us for defamation, but then apparently he's still doing the things that he claims that we're besmirching his character about. So we're going to get some more information on that and unpack it a little bit next week. But reportedly, he stole $125,000 from another dealer on a Porsche deal. So,
yikes.
Yeah. So much for defamation. He's doing his own defamation. So it's interesting. Let's do the props and flops of the week.
And the props and flops are, oh goodness, props and flops are brought to you by the Switch Cars.
And flocks.
I got a little ahead of myself.
Birds and shoes.
Whoo! Switch Cars is the enthusiast's dealership where we buy, sell, consign, service, and store only cars that we like ourselves. Check out our handpicked inventory at switchcars.com. And Doug, our pick of the week from Switch Cars inventory is what?
2021 Lotus Evora GT. Ooh. 3.5 liter supercharged V6, pushing 400 horsepower, six-speed manual transmission, and beautiful nightfall blue metallic color with a carbon package. Only 2,500 miles since new, and it is as new. So if you're looking for a nice example of those in a exciting color, check it out at switchcars.com. And nice. If you mention the discount code SWITCHCAST, you'll get $1,000 off our listed price.
All right. Now, enough of that Lotus business. What's the real pick of the week, Doug? You told me before the show.
The Lotus?
No, the Toyota Corolla outside.
Yeah, there is a Toyota Corolla out front.
Thought I was in the wrong place for a second.
If anybody needs a kid, you know, the college kid mobile or something like that, you know. So, prop of the week. Jay Roberts, Gonzo Prius, sets an autonomous cannonball record with his wife, Gypsy. The important thing here is the percent of autonomy, not the speed. That's right. He went incredibly slow. In fact, he told me his plans were to drive the speed limit the entire trip. So no laws were broken here, but he did set out and had a contraption to track down to a science, the number of times he touched the steering wheel, or like made a correction or provided any type of human input. So it not only kept a counter of the actual interactions, but like the total time. So they had a percentage meter going that said how much of their drive across country was autonomous. And I'm terrible at this because I did not put the numbers in front of me, but it was approximately, it was just over 98% autonomous.
Whoa.
Yes. I think it was 98.4 actually, going from memory. The previous record, which was, did not have that level of documentation. It was basically estimated, was Alex Roy's, which was about, I think it was 97.8, but that was kind of a number picked out of the sky. Jay set out to have just incredible levels of documentation on every aspect of his trip, GPS tracking, multiple in-person witnesses at the start and finish, multiple witnesses over glimpse, tons of electronic data logs, basically huge amount of proof for his claims and a huge amount of data to say this is exactly what we did. And very cool that he did it with his wife. I like coining those types of runs, a cannonball and chain. But there's three important things to take away from this run. One, while I used to be in favor of autonomous vehicles, I've changed my opinion 180 degrees after reading the book Why We Drive by Matthew Crawford. It's a book I have recommended multiple times on this podcast. I think it's one of the greatest automotive books in history. Again, I'm not going to unpack all the reasons for Matthew Crawford's kind of stance against autonomy. Well, I'll just say, go read it. And I celebrate Jay and Gypsy's achievement. It is certainly an interesting moment in Cannonball history. And it is hearkening back to kind of the early days of Cannonball, when Cannonball Baker and Ab Jenkins and all those guys were doing it in the early 1900s. That was about moving a technology forward. It was about proving the legitimacy of the automobile as a mode of transportation. And what Jay did is along those same lines. It's kind of taking us back 100 years in Cannonball. He's proving the legitimacy, the possibility of autonomy. And I'm not necessarily in love with that technology, but I celebrate the achievement and what it says about the progress of technology with automobiles. And it's just a cool idea of driving, but not driving across the country. The second thing to take away, his burden of proof for a slow run is absolutely incredible. The list of stuff he had is very, very long, and it sets a standard for any run, I think, in which someone wants to claim some sort of notable achievement, whether it's an overall record or a rental or a solo or a nonstop or anything like that. I strongly believe that it is up to the person who runs to prove that it was done, not for the rest of the watching world to have to disprove a ridiculous claim. I'm not going to name any names. Three, I want to talk a little bit about like the subcategory runs, right? So you have the Cannonball record, then you have the nonstop record. You have people doing it solo, which is one person. You have people doing it nonstop, which is, you know, no fuel stops. Jay also coincidentally holds a record for that. You have the coast to coast to coast record. You have all sorts of other things. You have people, you know, I did it in a classic car. I did it with a dog in the back, or I did it with this or that or whatever. And some of it's in fun. Some of it's just our own personal challenges of like, well, I want to try something and I, you know, I'm not going to go beat 25 hours and 39 minutes. So I want to do something else that's exciting. And that's what is fun about the community. But like, I guess, any other sport, and this came up, Ed Bullion sent me this screenshot recently of this guy who was claiming to be the first person to score 50 points in the same arena in both NCAA or in high school or something and in the NBA. And it had thousands of likes and comments and shares. And I'm like, who gives a crap? Like, nobody ever cared about that record, but you did. You might have been the first person to ever play in the same arena in NBA and in high school. Like, it just doesn't matter. So it's not just Cannonball that people are seeking out nuanced records, but I'm going to make a declaration that may or may not matter to anyone, because nobody has appointed me the Pope of Cannonball Records, nor do I have any interest in being one. But it's just an opinion. What I say, we're an opinion podcast. My Cannonball declaration is, any record that has more than one qualifier in front of it just doesn't count. Right?
I like it.
I did it in rental car. I have the fastest rental car time. Okay, that's cool. I have the fastest rental car time with only two drivers. Nah, it's too many qualifiers. I have the fastest pickup truck time. Okay, that's cool. You did it in pickup truck. That's different. I have the fastest American pickup truck time.
Nope.
Don't care. There's a lot of those things. I mean, I feel like once you go beyond one qualifier of like, I did it in a diesel car, or I did it nonstop, or I did it solo, you're starting to get into like Corvette rare level of records. Like, I did it the fastest on a weekday instead of a weekend, and we don't care. So anyway, nobody cares. I just feel like that should be the line of delineation. Jay set the autonomous record. Boom. That's a great claim. He did the highest level, highest percentage of autonomy that anybody else has done. Boom. But somebody else is going to go out there and be like, well, I did the most level of autonomy in an EV car.
Yeah. Or like, what I really like about this is it's something that isn't entirely time based, but is more based around, like you had kind of called out earlier, like the changing landscape of cars.
Right.
Like, he still did the run.
Right.
But it actually wasn't about speed, and like the speed is getting, you know, potentially extremely dangerous with the times that were set, and lots of people are trying to do it, and it's like so fast at this point, it's ridiculous. I think he's kind of, I like the direction he took this.
Yeah. And there's also some like single qualifiers, which mean nothing as well, because you could say anything like, I'm the fastest redhead or whatever. But, you know, we're already
who's got that?
We are already way beyond the point past where the general public gives a crap anyway. So we're just going to move on. Our flop of the week is TikTok. Yes, that's right. Some of you have seen the article where the government is considering a bill to ban TikTok unless they are sold to a non-Chinese company. Because they're concerned that they're using our data in a way that's nefarious or not allowed or whatever. But ironically, I think I just heard yesterday that the same government struck down a bill to require a warrant for our own government to spy on American citizens via like their cell phone logs and message records and stuff like that. So
it's just not okay when the other people do it, Doug. Right? Try to keep up. It's okay when we do it. It's not okay when they do it.
A little bit of a double standard. But anyway, TikTok's response to this, like trying to mobilize people to call their senators and stuff, I don't have the quote in front of me, but it was paraphrased something to the effect of, no, we need to uphold and protect free speech. Need a sound effect here. Like, Okay, TikTok, let's talk about all the ways you have suppressed free speech on your platform. Like, that's real rich. That is like Fred Ashmore calling for improved standards of proof for Cannonball Records. It's like Carvana calling for more strict titling laws. Come on. Like, great example of this. So we've had a number of videos demonetized or removed completely from TikTok because they were mean. I told somebody to shut it once.
How could you?
Right. So that one was removed completely.
I think you said suck it.
Whatever.
Amazing.
They were wrong.
Same difference.
Apparently you're not allowed to smack talk because that's bullying or mean or whatever, hate speech, whatever. Had a video taken down multiple times. It was doing donuts under fireworks on private property because it was promoting dangerous acts. video talking about Cannonball Record taken down because it was promoting dangerous acts. So there's really no free speech here. But the most crazy one is recently we had a video do quite well about a million mile Ferrari 456. And I made a reference, basically an analogy that said that the interior had so much makeup on it, so much dye on the leather. It had more makeup than a retired stripper. And that was removed because it was sexually suggestive content. Or sorry, not removed. It was demonetized. It was demonetized.
Yeah, they didn't take it down. They just stopped paying you. But I also thought they... I don't know if this had anything to do with it, but you use the term shrinkage to describe the leather in the car after so long. And we put up that little still of George Costanza out of the pool.
That was shrinkage.
I highly doubt it. It's possible.
Maybe George Costanza was offended and he reported the video.
Maybe that's what, yeah, Jason Alexander got really mad with it.
Yeah.
In both instances, it's like you were clearly explicitly referring to the vehicle. And in whatever terms you were using, it was very obviously about the vehicle and not about anything else.
Well, and the crazy thing is it got 250,000 views in a couple days, even though part of demonetization is they essentially suppress it. They don't put it in the For You feed. So this video was killing it, even against all odds with TikTok. So we appealed it. They said, oh yeah, you're right. We're gonna pay you for those 250,000 views. And the views instantly stopped. We got like 1,000 more views in the last week and a half. So they deliberately, obviously suppressed it because people wanted to see the video and TikTok's like, nope, we're gonna let you have your money, but we're gonna suppress it. So I think it's real rich that TikTok is saying, no, we need to protect free speech. Don't ban us from the U.S., but they're just doing such a terrible job at it. Anyway, that's all we have for tonight. I am looking forward to next week. We've got a lot of great material already in the works. I hope you are as well. And after this, we're going to have our bonus round of live Q&A. So if you're watching on YouTube or Instagram or Facebook, throw those questions in. We'll have our bonus round of TikTok. For those of you listening on the audio podcast, thank you again for joining us. We want to thank our sponsors, Boxcast, Nuts for Sticks, Switch Cars, Celebrity Machines, Parallel Printworks, and Stephen Holm Woodworking. Thank you to our producer, Ethan Huffnagel, and our Ed McMahon, Tyler Sanders. Our bumper music is provided by Emily and Ivory. You can stream their album on Spotify or SoundCloud. This episode will be available next Monday in audio format wherever you listen to podcasts. Thank you for listening, and we'll see you next Wednesday at 8 p.m. as we look forward to edifying, entertaining, and educating you on the drive of your life.